All glories to the assembled. April 9th, 2013, in Radadesh, Belgium, and we're going to be entering Krishna's adventures. Should we maybe have some of the lights off? Yeah, that's better. Okay. So sometimes we think that, all right, well, my life now is all material. It's all just the result of karma. It's all just awful. And someday, by some mercy and some grace that falls on my head, somehow or other, I'm going to enter into Krishna's adventures. So that, of course, reminds me very much of the dogmas of other faiths that basically say this life is just a life of suffering. When you die, you go to heaven. So that's not actually what's going on. What's going on is quite different. But it's a question of whether or not we have our consciousness in the right place. So this is a quote from Jivadharma, a Bhaktivinoda Thakur, which gives us the philosophical basis for what we're going to be meditating on. He says, the Leelas of Sri Krishna are unlimited and variegated. Hence, this material world also is another of his many unique activities. When the supreme autocrat willfully engages in a kaleidoscope of pastimes, why should it be unusual for him to enact this particular pastime? If the principle of variegated leelas is kept intact, not a single type of leela can be rejected. So that we can accept that Krishna's creation of this world, the activities of this world, are also part of his divine pastimes. Whatever the leela, the participants assisting the Lord may have to accept many hardships and pain. Sri Krishna is the Purusha, the supreme enjoyer and absolute master. So whatever the leela, even in Goloka Vrindavan, the highest devotees, the gopis, they have so many difficulties from their families. Yes?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. Thank you. Just wanted to know if you're like here. I mean, Prabhupada says we can preach to the four walls, but when it looks like somebody's here other than the four walls, you just kind of want to check every once in a while. All the upakarna, participants and paraphernalia, are fully under the control of the Purusha, and they are the working tools of the Supreme Creator. In fully surrendering oneself to the sweet will of the Supreme Lord, it is only natural that one may have to accept adversities also. If finally this material adversity turns into an auspicious state that is far from miserable, then why ultimately should one call it adversity? So in Krishna's pastimes, there's a variety of emotions. And if you read the emotions, the anubhavs, in the Nectar Devotion, some of them sound pretty awful. Disease and death and lamentation and grief. And if any of you read the Nectar Devotion lately, and you might think, whoa, what do I want that for? But we want variety. Normal baby noises are fine. Hey, no, normal baby noises are fine. Mangala, Chandrika. Normal baby noises are fine. Absolute screaming, crying is not fine, but just normal. That may be me in 40, 50 years, so it's fine. No problem. So we might wonder, you know, how is it that in the spiritual world that there are these varieties of emotions that appear to us to be negative? But even in this world, we have some sense that enjoyment may have many different forms. Actually, Srila Prabhupada says that everything, says this in the preface to the Nectar Devotion, that everything anyone is trying to do is trying to enjoy one of the 12 rasas. And there's a number of lectures that Srila Prabhupada gives on this topic. So the 12 rasas, we all know the five main ones. What are the five main ones? Shanta, Dasya, Sakya, Vatsalya, and Madhurya, Shringar. But what are the others?
Hasya.
Yes, comedy. And? Ghastliness, yes. And?
Fear.
Chivalry.
Wonder.
Anger.
Mercy.
So we also enjoy these. So I give this example all the time. Somebody goes to see a movie and somebody says, was it a nice movie? And they go, oh yeah, it was great. I couldn't stop crying. So we have this concept, yes? Or people like to see horror movies, or people go on amusement park rides to experience fear. Correct? People pay their money, they take their time and their money to experience fear, to experience ghastliness, to experience grief. Of course, comedy is pretty easy to understand. Compassion, karuna ras. So these things, we even materially, we have some sense that these things are varieties of enjoyment. Just like in a meal, you don't want only gulab jamuns. You also want something salty. You want something even bitter. Many people enjoy things that are bitter. Many people enjoy things that are pungent, that are spicy. You know, I was just in one temple where there was a devotee there from Mauritius. All the other devotees there were European. And she said, I just can't eat this prasadam. I said, why not? She said, well, there's no chilies in it. You know, I have to go back to my room and add the chilies to the food or I can't eat it. So we have this kind of sense. So actually, the so-called suffering in Krishna's lila are varieties of enjoyment. And that can be true also in this lila, in the material world, if one sees things that way. So continuing with our quote, on the transcendental platform, the tribulations of the jiva while trying to satisfy the Lord in his pastimes are by all accounts pleasurable. Yet the conditioned soul, so we've established already the principle, the material world is one of the lilas of the Lord. In all of the lilas of the Lord, the jiva is going to have to go through some apparent tribulations. Why? One, we talked about already, in order to experience rasa. And the other is, otherwise it's not a story. We all like stories. Everybody likes stories? Why do we like stories? Because Krishna likes stories. Krishna's not boring. If you want boring, there's the Brahman. You know, any jiva who says, I just want boring. But Krishna likes stories. And stories have what?
Adventures.
And what does a story have to have? Anybody remember this from there?
Hero.
Huh?
Hero.
It has to have a hero, yes.
Challenge.
It has to have a challenge. There has to be a conflict. There's the introduction. You remember all this from your classes? Secondary school. Maybe primary school. There's an introduction, a rising action, and then there's a crisis. There's a climax, and there's a falling action, then there's a conclusion. There has to be some difficulty. Yes? I remember one time writing a story in school about, you know, like I got up, I brushed my teeth, I brushed my hair, I got dressed, I went to school, and the teacher said, this isn't a story. There has to be some problem. So Krishna's lilas means there's some story. And to engage in the lilas and fully experience rasa, the jiva is also experiencing these difficulties. But the jiva experiences these difficulties as rasa. Right? So what's our problem in the material world? Bhaktivinoda Thakur goes on, yet the conditioned soul, by misuse of his free will, denies himself the exaltation one experiences whilst directly assisting Sri Krishna in his transcendental pastimes. You're following the logic of this. The material world is Krishna's pastimes. We could be engaging with Krishna in lila here, because here is part of his lila. And we could be experiencing both the good things and the bad things as varieties of rasa in lila. And why aren't we? Is that because Krishna is denying that to us? Is that because Krishna is saying, suffer, you sinful wretches? No. We are denying ourselves the exaltation one experiences. We're doing it. It's like we're at a party and saying, I'm not going to have any fun. I'm not. I'm just not. Instead, he embraces Maya, who gives him only acute harassment. So what is Maya? Maya means? What is not? That which is not. Where does Maya exist? Krishna book chapter 14. Or Bhagavatam canto 10 chapter 14. Where does Maya exist? Where is Maya? Huh?
In the shadow of Krishna?
Yes, but as far as we're concerned, where does Maya exist? Only within the mind. Only within the mind. Krishna book, chapter 14. Maya exists only within the mind. And in Krishna book, chapter 20, Prabhupada says that the conditioned soul sees everything as very aggressively situated, but the devotee, everything is happily situated. Even in this material world. So we're going to meditate now on a particular lila of Krishna, where Krishna's devotees, as far as assisting him and enjoying rasa, entered into apparent tribulation. So this particular lila that we're about to meditate on is the swallowing of the second forest fire. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur in his Shikshamrita says that this forest fire represents the obstacles that atheists create against dharma and preachers of dharma. So is this something that we have to encounter, especially in Kali Yuga, that the atheists are putting many obstacles to the preaching of dharma? Yes? So I've been reviewing some films for our Sociology of Religion course, and one of them is dealing with the persecution of the Buddhists in Tibet, and another with the persecution of the Muslims when Islam first started. And it's just incredible how, you know, the materialistic people, if someone just says there's a God and you should believe in God, they're ready to torture them and kill them. So we don't have that going on, at least not at this part of the world at this particular time in history. But we do have very vigorous propaganda against spiritual life, and it affects even our own members. Because most of us come from the outside society, most of us deal with the outside society. So there's this constant attack of adharma. Don't worship God, don't be a theist, don't even be righteous, you know, don't even be pious. And this even enters into our Hare Krishna movement, I'm sorry to say, that our members will sometimes become affected by some of this adharmic propaganda and start saying, yes, you know, we should allow this adharmic thing, and I'm not going to go into details, and this adharmic thing, and that adharmic thing, even in our Krishna consciousness movement. So it's like a fire. You know, it's like this fire of a dharma that we're suffering in and calling out to Krishna, please, please save me in this Kali Yuga from all of this sinful life, this idea that all we are is a bunch of chemicals coming from a primordial soup. We're just a brain, you know, we're just this body and there's nothing else but that. And the material world is all about just competition and dog eat dog and just do whatever you like. And as long as people agree, then they can do whatever they like. As long as I agree that I can eat you and you agree that I can eat you, then I can eat you. And as far as the animals, we don't even have to get them to agree and so forth and so on. And it's such a difficult situation. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, as far as these meditating on these lilas, so we're meditating on this lila here for two purposes, and these purposes really are very interrelated. One purpose is so we can meditate on what does it mean to enter into Krishna's lilas, and how we can engage in that meditation now. Not after this class, not tomorrow, but now. Because it's only ever, always now. Yes? It's never the future. Correct? Is it ever the future? No, never the future. Okay. So that's one thing that we can do. And the other thing, which again is very related, is by meditating on these pastimes, we get free of these anartas. Now, of course, being free of these anartas clears our consciousness and enables us to perceive our life as part of Krishna's pastimes. So it's very related. So I'm going to read from Shikshamrita. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, the highest knowledge is prema. This is revealed in two ways in the activities of Krishna. Directly, it is obtained through the daily pastimes, eight-thrilled pastimes. Indirectly, it is obtained through the pastimes of killing the demons, from the killing of Putana to the killing of Kamsa. These pastimes exist symbolically in Vraja and only as impressions in Goloka. Actually, they are not found there and cannot exist there. Reading the indirect pastimes, the devotee can purify himself. Being purified, he can taste the direct pastimes and perceive Goloka. So by meditating on these pastimes of Krishna killing demons and Krishna putting out these fires, we are able to perceive Krishna's pastimes both in the material and spiritual world. Then he goes on to say, the devotee who worships the holy name should first petition the Lord for the strength to cast out all these unfavorable tendencies and should pray thus before Lord Hari on a daily basis. By doing this regularly, the devotee's heart will eventually become purified. Or one can think Krishna has killed a number of demons which may arise in the kingdom of the heart. So in order to destroy these problems, a devotee must cry very humbly before the Lord and admit defeat. Then the Lord will nullify all contaminations. Our meditation on this pastime particularly destroys the contamination of the age of Kali and the influence of Adharma. So this is the same day as the pastimes in Talavan and the killing of Pralambasura, and it's at the end of the summer. So you remember the story of the killing of Pralambasura, where Pralambasura comes as a cowherd boy. He mixes with the cowherd boys, and when the cowherd boys are fighting, they fought in two groups. But they were two boys fighting together, but each boy was on a different team. Whichever team won got to ride on the shoulders of the losing team. So Krishna's team lost, and Balaram's team won. So Balaram was carried by the members of Krishna's team, one of which was this Pralamba, who was disguised as a cowherd boy. And he thought, let me take Balaram far away from Krishna, and that way I'll be able to kill Balaram. So here we see at the start of this where Balaram's riding on Pralamba, right? And there Krishna's carrying Shridham. And Pralamba takes Balaram across the Yamuna to the Bandiravan forest, where there's a huge banyan tree. Who here has been to Bandiravan? Okay, very nice place to go to. I humbly suggest next time you're in Vrindavan, go to Bandiravan. It's very quiet. It's relatively clean. There's not people bugging you for money. It's very peaceful. You can see many, many pastime sites there. Unfortunately, the main residents there who used to show the devotees around and give us hospitality, both the husband and wife have died. Both of them in a freak, sudden accident some years after the other. But anyway, it's still a very nice place to go. So there they were by the Bandiravan tree. And they were playing very happily. The cowherd boys, they were all celebrating the victory of Balaram, and they were enjoying their pastimes. And they got so involved in enjoying their pastimes with Balaram and Krishna and with each other and playing different games and climbing on the tree that they didn't notice that their job was not being done very well. So perhaps this happens to us sometimes. We just get so involved in the kirtan and so involved in some ecstatic part of our service that we forget, oh, I have a job to do. I'm supposed to have some service to do for Krishna. Oh my God, now it's 8 o'clock at night and I haven't gotten it done and it has to be done by tomorrow. Has this ever happened to any of you? You know, you pick up the Bhagavatam and you just start reading and reading, and then you look at your watch and say, oh, you know, 3 hours have gone by. So this is what happened to the cowherd boys, and they just became totally absorbed in their celebration and their playing. Now here we have cows, goats, and buffalo. And the cows, goats, and buffalo, not being watched, started to think, oh, look at that fresh grass over there. So does this also happen to us sometimes? Right? That if nobody's watching us, we all like to think that we're very independent and mature, but still, if nobody's watching us for a while, we may think, oh, look, there's some fresh grass over there, away from where Krishna is. Let me go check it out. So even the cows, goats, and buffalo in the Leela had this problem. Yeah, remember, they're also pure devotees. Let me go see what's over there. Yes? So even though they're under Krishna's... I should tell you also, what I'm talking about comes from Krishna book, Bhagavatam, 10th canto, the commentaries of the Acharyas on the 10th canto, Ananda Vrindavan Champu, and any other place where this Leela is described. So I put that all together. Unfortunately, I didn't make notes here of exactly what came from what. So if you ask me, I won't necessarily remember because I put this together about 4 years ago. So even though the cows, goats, and buffalo were under Krishna's personal protection, they had some greediness for sense enjoyment. And thus they suffered for their whimsy. And we're going to see here that although they had some interest in sense gratification, it's not that Krishna just immediately rejected them and said, okay, goodbye. But he saves them, although they did suffer. All right, and they started wandering away. Pretty soon they were far away. This is also very much the process of difficulty, isn't it? That first we take one step away from Krishna, and we can still see him. And then we take another step, we can still see him. And then pretty soon, we can't see him anymore. And we wonder, how did I get here? So they wandered 15 kilometers, 5 kroshas. Hmm? 15 kilometers to the forest that's called Ishikatava. It's also called Mandiriyari. It's also called Munjaranya. Three names for this forest. And they were very attracted to this forest because it had very, very sweet grass. But unfortunately, it also had very sharp sugarcane. So this also happens to us, right? We think, oh, I can still see Krishna. Let me get a little enjoyment over there. And pretty soon we're further and further and further and further away. And we don't even notice that we're further away. And then, oh, look at that nice grass over there. And then, caught. Yes? So when one deviates, there may be some period of time where one can turn around and go back, but at a certain point then, you get stuck. So the cows, goats, and buffalo became stuck. And in the distance, you can see kind of in the distance over there. See those clouds over there? Not normal clouds, are they? Well, that's because in the distance, there was a fire. There was a fire. So they were stuck in the sharp canes. They were far from water. And they were starting to feel the heat from a fire. So they were feeling intensely thirsty. But now they were stuck. They could not get back out and retrace their steps. It's very much like what happens to us in general in the material world, yes? 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 Okay. So meanwhile, the boys start to notice, where's our animals? Now, Sridhar Swami says that Krishna and Balaram were not feeling any remorse. So you see Krishna and Balaram here are happy. But the other boys, they were feeling remorse. They were feeling, oh, we've neglected our duty. We've neglected our duty. So again, sometimes this may happen to us, that we may become so absorbed in Krishna consciousness that we, the cows and goats and buffalo, their problem was that they were lured by sense gratification. But for the cowherd boys, their problem was that they were so absorbed in ecstasy that they forgot that they had another service. And Sanatana Jiva Goswami says that the cowherd boys, they got this absorption simply because Krishna and Balaram wanted to experience a new pastime. Now, the remorse that the boys are feeling here is that of love for the cows. It's full of love. They're thinking, oh, our poor cows. Now, it's the fact that they lost their livelihood, But please don't think they were just thinking, oh, now we've lost our livelihood, we're going to get in trouble with our parents, we won't make any money. They weren't considering materially like that. They were considering, oh, the poor cows, are they all right? Are they going to be okay? They're all devotees. So this may also happen to us in terms of other devotees. We may have some devotees in our heart, we do have some devotees in our Krishna consciousness movement who start seeing some fresh green grass someplace and wander off and get stuck in the sharp canes in a forest fire. And we're so busy having our own kirtans and our own programs that we forget about them. And we may think, wait, what about those devotees? What about those devotees? And of course, this is true not only for those who are already in the Krishna consciousness movement, this is true for all jivas. That all jivas are actually part of Krishna's lila, and they've wandered off and gotten stuck in the sharp canes and are surrounded by a forest fire. And we may think, what about them? So it's nice that I'm here playing with Krishna, but what about them? So they couldn't find them. They were calling and looking and looking, and they couldn't find them. And then they were expert trackers. So generally when the cows and... Oh, Haripo! Generally when the cows and goats and buffalo, when they're walking around and they're eating the grass, generally the grass grows back immediately again. But in this case, it stayed down, so they could follow the tracks of where the animals had eaten the grass and also where they had stepped on it with their hooves. So they were following. Of course, remember, this is 15 kilometers they're walking, and the boys start getting very tired and thirsty also. Now, Nanda Vrindavan Champu says that first the boys went without Krishna, and then they came back to the banyan tree to tell Krishna they couldn't find the cows and goats and buffalo, and then Krishna Balaram went back with the other boys. Now you see, Krishna here is calling the cows by name with a voice like a thundering cloud and with love. And the cows, they're hearing the boy. You see that boy in the background? See that boy? See him there? Right? He wasn't there in the other picture, was he? Oops. Wait, that wasn't where I wanted to go to. Oh, now that it's started, it won't stop again. Try to do that. Okay, sorry. Sometimes technology doesn't want to work the way I want it to. So the cows heard the boys and Krishna, and they were calling back to Krishna. And Sanatana Goswami says that this was Sankirtan, that Krishna was calling the names of the cows. You know that Krishna calls the names of the cows every day when he goes home from the forest, and he has japa beads. Krishna has his own japa beads. They're made out of? Anybody know what they're made out of?
Jewels.
They're made out of jewels. And Krishna calls the names of the chiefs of all the cow groups. So there's not only gopi groups and cowherd boy groups, but there's also cow groups according to their colors and their characteristics. So Krishna's calling them. So here Krishna's calling the names of all the cows, and they're responding by mooing. And the boys were so happy that by fortune all the animals were found in one place. Because, you know, if this whole huge herd of animals walks off, who knows what's going to happen. Some of the cows may go over here, and some of the cows may go over here, and some may go over here. So somehow they were all together, and the cows were licking Krishna and kissing him, and they were mooing. And all the time they had been stuck in those canes, they had been absorbed in samadhi. They'd been absorbed in meditation. So even if the devotee makes some mistake, then they remember, oh, Krishna, save me. Oh, Krishna, save me. So then they started walking back. All the animals and the cowherd boys, they start walking back again, celebrating. We found all the animals. We found all the animals. But there was still the fire. Oh, by the way, they were all very thirsty. They still hadn't had anything to drink. So the boys had gotten very thirsty going to find the animals. Yes. So let's think so far about the tribulations. You know, we have the tribulations of the cowherd boys. They couldn't find their animals. All of a sudden they looked around and they were gone. Then they had to search for them. It was very difficult to find them. And then they had to call them and call them. Finally they responded. And while they're looking, they're feeling very thirsty. It's not just that it's some sort of, you know, la-di-da-di-da. There's difficulty that they're overcoming in the course of their service. And now they think, oh, now all of our difficulty is gone, except we're still thirsty. So this may also happen to us, that we have some challenge in our devotional service, and we go and we take care of it. We think, oh, now it's done. Nope. So the fire was coming from all eight directions, with the wind carrying it like a chariot driver carries the chariot. So the wind was bringing the fire all eight directions. That includes up and down. And flames were flying like meteors. So Sanatana Goswami says this fire was a demon friend of Pralambasura, who was really angry that Pralambasura was killed. Or perhaps the fire actually was a demon but wanted to associate with Krishna. So I want to go be with Krishna. Then the boys started praying. So now the boys were in great difficulty. Now it wasn't just that the boys were undergoing some austerity to save the cows, but now the boys and the cows were all in great difficulty. Now it's explained that the boys were praying to Krishna like a person who's afraid of death meditates on a picture of the Lord. And the reason it's like is that the boys were not actually afraid of death. They have spiritual bodies and they don't really have any fear. But they were afraid of separation from Krishna. They were afraid, you know, if we so-called die, we won't be with Krishna anymore in his leelas. And what about our cows? They may get hurt. So they were thinking about the other devotees. So you can tell this is Karuna Ras, right? They're feeling compassion. They're feeling fear. And they're very dependent on Krishna. You know, although they treat Krishna like he's one of them, they have this sense of, I'm just dependent on Krishna. And at first they said, Krishna Balaram, save us. But really they were thinking, first they asked Krishna Balaram together, then they just asked Krishna. They asked Krishna Balaram together first out of respect, and then just Krishna, because they have special affection for Krishna. So they were thinking, Krishna will save and Balaram will help. And they were remembering, Gargamuni said that Krishna saves anyone who depends on him. So Krishna told the boys, you just close your eyes. Now Prabhupada says that Krishna gave this message not by speaking, but by indicating with his eyes. So Krishna very much likes to do this. Actually, we all like to do this. We all like to speak indirectly and have somebody understand what we're saying without out and out saying it. It's indicative of a very close relationship with someone. You just say one word, or you just say something kind of hinting and they get it. Isn't that satisfying when that happens? Yeah, so when you just get something that someone else says, they just say a word or two, or with their eyes, you know, they just go, and you just get it, or just a little gesture. So Krishna loves doing this kind of stuff. And by the way, he's also doing this with us now. You know, many times, so many times, devotees will say, why doesn't Krishna just, like, tell me what to do? Why doesn't he give me a letter? You know, point one, do this. Point two, do this. Point three, do this. That's not how he likes to work. Krishna's interested in relationships and in rasa. That's his enjoyment. And if we see things like that, that's also our enjoyment. So Krishna just indicates with his eyes. And the boys are thinking, why does Krishna want us to close our eyes? Krishna also told him, don't be afraid. So this is very common that Krishna will say to his devotees, don't be afraid, don't be afraid, don't be afraid. So this is also this exchange of rasa, this feeling of fear and then this feeling of safety. Feeling of fear and then safety. Right? Don't we enjoy that? Yes. I'm thinking also of the paintings you see sometimes where Krishna's, where it's raining and Krishna's with Radharani, one of the gopis, and they're hiding from the rain, yes? So this idea that there's some difficulty and then I get protection. The devotees very much enjoy that, and Krishna very much enjoys giving this protection. He likes being the hero. Don't fear. So Krishna wants them to close their eyes so he can play a trick on them and instantly bring them back to Bandiravan, but the boys are wondering, why is Krishna telling me to close my eyes? So this also happens to us, that Krishna asks us to do things and we're like, why is he asking me to do that? I don't understand. And the boys were thinking, I know what it is. Krishna is going to use jewels and mantras and herbs to stop this fire, but it has to be done secretly or it won't work. Now, actually, one reason that Krishna wanted them to close their eyes is he wanted to play a trick on them. And another reason is that he didn't want them to see what he was doing. And what was Krishna going to be doing? He was going to swallow this fire. So Krishna knew that if the devotees saw him swallowing fire, they'd try to go save him. And they'd feel pain. Krishna's going to be hurt swallowing this fire. Just like how my grown-up daughter has measles. And she said the rash is inside of her throat and inside of her nose. So she says that her nose is always running, but if she blows her nose, it hurts because she's got this measles rash inside her nose. And if she tries to eat or drink anything, it burns her whole mouth and throat because she's got the rash inside her throat. So naturally, as her mother, I'm like, oh, my daughter is suffering. You know, I was like, please, can she not suffer anymore? So this is natural, yes? This Karuna Ras. So Krishna knew that the boys would feel like that towards him. And they'd feel like this towards him so much that they'd run through the fire to try to save him. Don't swallow the fire. It'll hurt your throat. Yes. So therefore, he had them close his eyes. He also had them close his eyes to show Brahma and the other demigods who were watching how much love he had for his friends. I love my friends so much that I will swallow fire for them. So we may think, okay, Krishna demands a lot of me. Ma may kam sharanam vraja. That's a lot, Krishna. You know, I don't know all this tapasya you require of me. But really, Krishna is willing to undergo so much difficulty for his devotees. Really, what Krishna asks of us is very small. And if we do that in the mood of lila and rasa, it's very relishable. You know, after all, if I give Krishna everything, what have I given? How much everything do I have to give? What's the sum total of my everything? And what does Krishna give me in return? He gives me everything. So who gets the better end of the deal here? Yes? So Krishna is willing to give everything for his devotees, even swallowing fire. But Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that Krishna, this fire appeared and Krishna swallowed it because Krishna wanted to taste fire. He was thirsty for fire. And I think of it like this Mauritian lady I met in Zagreb who needs to eat her chilies. Or I have one devotee friend who would always pour chili powder and salt on his plate, a little mound of it, and that was his dessert after he finished. And even if there were sweets, he would put chili on the sweets. You know, you'd give him a piece of cake and he'd put chili powder on his cake. We're all individuals. So Krishna also sometimes likes chilies. I mean, and when Krishna likes chilies, he really likes chilies. He's going for the whole fire. So he has a thirst for it. But also the acharyas say that because the devotees don't really like about Krishna to think about Krishna drinking fire, you can meditate that it turned into ambrosia as soon as it touched Krishna's lips. So he didn't actually have to drink fire. As soon as that yogamaya just turned it into this cooling ambrosia. Or that the fire itself became scared, and as it came to touch Krishna's lips, it became a soothing, cooling drink. So the boys were almost unconscious at this point, and of course they had closed their eyes. And now either on Krishna's order or on their own initiative. So sometimes also devotees think that if I'm a devotee, everything has to be do this, do this, do this, which of course would make us a computer instead of a person. So it could be that Krishna said, now open your eyes, and it could be the boy said, oh, now it's time to open our eyes. So as after Krishna swallowing the fire, they open their eyes and they find themselves safe and where? Back in Bandirvan, 15 kilometers away. What was that? In Ananda Vrindavan Champu, the coward boys say, it must have been in some kind of an illusion. Why did I think there was a fire? Well, there was no fire. So also, when we are actually part of Krishna's leelas, we don't experience suffering as suffering. Why did I think that was suffering? When we come to our real consciousness, we think, why did I think that was suffering? And then, you know, the cowherd boys, they don't have this covering of all like Arjuna, where they just think, oh, now let me worship Krishna. They think, Krishna must be a demigod. Oh, we must be demigods too. And they were very happy. Oh, look at that. We must all be demigods. And they're all rejoicing. What a great friend we have in Krishna. He is so much fun. Then Krishna starts playing his flute in a very special way and takes the cowherd boys back to the village of Vrindavan. And while he's doing so, he mitigates the pain of the gopis who were in separation from him all during the day. And then they come back and see Mother Yasoda, and the cowherd boys tell Mother Yasoda, guess what Krishna did today? So now I have a special treat for all of you. Ready? I hope you like that. And when they came back, everybody had an increase of affection for Krishna, and at this point, the rainy season started. So we are being trained. We read, of course, in the Krishna book that if one becomes perfect or almost perfect in devotion at the end of this life, then one will go to the planet where, in the material world, where Krishna is having his lila for further training. And we say almost perfect because we read about how some of the gopis still had some material contamination, right? And by being restrained in their houses, that was burned off, etc. But this life is also part of that training. Srila Prabhupada says that this Hare Krishna movement is also the lila of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur says the whole material world is the lila of Krishna. So it's a question again as to whether we choose to remove these anarta demons in our mind and remove the maya from our mind and therefore be choosing to turn and exalt in Krishna's leelas and to see how our life is part of Krishna's leelas. That is really our process, not to just see, oh, everything in my life is separate from Krishna and someday when I'll be pure, then it will be connected with Krishna. But to start seeing now how it's connected with Krishna. And if we do that, because that's the reality, then we will very, very simply and easily enter into that reality. So it could take not more than 2 or 3 minutes because I have a bunch of things to do before my class. But if there's any questions or comments. Yes?
I've heard that lila means that there is an increasing happiness.
Yes.
But actually in this material world, we experience increasing suffering.
It's not in the material world. It's in material consciousness.
So
maya exists only within the mind. Actually, I heard something really incredible when I was in Mayapur last time. I was talking to Bhavananda, and he told me, he said, do you know what Prabhupada told me Bhavananda means? And I said, no. He said, everybody thinks it means Bhava Ananda. He said, but Prabhupada said it means Bhav Ananda, the bliss of coming into the material world to rescue the conditioned souls. It's like, whoa. So Prabhupada says in chapter 20, Krishna book, that the materialists see everything as aggressive and the devotees see everything as happily situated. This is also Krishna's kingdom. It's also Krishna's lila. It's whether, as we started with that quote from Bhaktivinoda, whether we choose to find exaltation in it or not. Now, you can't choose to find exaltation in material consciousness. That's what the materialists try to do, and some of the Karmakanda religionists try to do that too. Well, God's put me here to enjoy. Let me enjoy by the grace of God. That's Karmakanda. Maybe Karma Yoga. Maybe. Mostly it's Karmakanda. The Sakama devotees. That you're not going to get increasing happiness. But if you start to see your life, because that is the reality. Material consciousness is not the reality. It's not that, oh, the suffering here in the material world, that's the reality. So there's a seminar we give on chanting based from the 3rd and the 11th canto and a lot of other shastras. And it talks about how one of the points we bring up, and one devotee who was just here from Spain, Mahalakshmi, who's working on translating this into Spanish, she asked me about it. She says, how is it that the fourth consciousness, Turiya, comes after deep sleep? Shouldn't it come after wakefulness? I said, no. Dream is closer to spiritual consciousness. Deep sleep is even closer. Wakefulness is the furthest away. Our normal waking consciousness is the furthest away from reality. What we perceive as reality, Maya, is within the mind. What we're perceiving as reality is mind. It's something. It's not that it doesn't exist, but it's not what we think it is. Just like if you watch a movie, you know, you think somebody's jumping from a helicopter, but it's just lights on a screen. It's something. It's not, we're not like the Buddhists who say it doesn't exist. It's not what we think it is. So if we use our free will to turn our attention, I'm part of Krishna's pastimes. How is Krishna dealing with me? Let me see what's happening in my life as part of Krishna's adventure. Just try. Just try. He'll help you. Just make that effort. Just say, what's happening to me is part of Krishna's adventure. I mean, of course, to do that, you have to actually be part of Krishna's adventure. So you have to have a life within the fence of Guru Sadhu Shastra. It's not that you can be going, you know, cutting off the heads of cows and aborting babies and selling liquor and saying this is all part of Krishna's adventure. But if you're really working for Krishna's adventure, yes? Are we? Yes? Yes? I hope. Yes. Even if we sometimes wander off into the Ichikatan, what is the name of that forest? The Isikatava forest. It's not that they stopped being part of Krishna's adventure just because they wandered off one time. So even if you wander off a little bit here and there, you can still be part of Krishna's adventure. Isn't that nice? You know? Just think like that, and Krishna will reciprocate with you because that's the reality. How is Krishna working with my life? How is this part of Krishna's adventure? Krishna, save me! Like the cowherd boys, or Peg, you know. Krishna, we're your devotees, we're your surrendered devotees. It's not nice for us to suffer in this way. Can you save us? And then they're dependent on Krishna. You can save me or not, and however you save me, that's okay. Just meditate like that. Because that is real. That is the reality. So if you meditate on the reality, guess what? You'll start seeing the reality. Yes, Prabhu.
Thank you for your partner. Could you, it's definitely a concept I'm not hearing personally so often.
Mm.
But the first thing that came to my mind is there a danger to take Krishna lightly and then that you are part of divine life?
Yeah, I think so. I think much better, why don't I look at my life and say, everything I do is just Maya. Everything I do is illusion. Everything that's happening to me is all material and due to my karma.
I think I didn't finish.
Yes.
The second part is the verse from Bhagavad Gita, Nimitra Matra, 11:33, where Shrutapani comment is saying that this world, the secret mission of this world is to pull out the soul.
Mm-hmm.
So at least my concept was always, you know, I'm definitely not part of any kind of Buddha, but there is a chance. And I'm aspiring to move forward.
No, actually, you are part of the Lila. No, you are part of the Lila. It's not that you're part of the Lila in the sense that you can say, if I punch you in the nose, that's part of Krishna's divine Lila. That I can just do whatever I want. I can cut off cows' heads and say, that's Krishna's Lila. Not like that. So that's a valid objection. But you are. Aren't you helping conditioned souls to get out of illusion? Aren't you? Yes?
I'm definitely conditioned, so...
Well, are you helping yourself also to get out of illusion? Aren't you trying to make Radha Gopinath happy? aren't you contributing to Srila Prabhupada's mission? Yeah, I think so. Even if sometimes you say, oh, looks like there's some green grass over there. They didn't pop out of the lila just because they thought that. I mean, they had to suffer. They got brought back. Why not? You are. Therefore, Bhaktivinoda Thakur is saying, it's my choice. Do I choose to find exaltation in the lila, or do I choose to be miserable? It doesn't mean I'm a divine being and whatever I do is divine. That's not what it means. But that I see that everything that's happening to me is happening to me from Krishna, and I'm part of Krishna's plan, and I'm part of Krishna's adventure. Try it. Yeah, try it for a few days. Give it a try for 3 days. See how it works out. See how you like it. You can always go back. Tried for a week or two even, you know. You can always go back to thinking everything I do is just miserable and under the laws of karma and someday I'm going to be in Krishna's adventure. You can see if you like it or not. I'm so sorry, but I really have to go because we have a class.